EOTM Radio. Entrepreneurs on the move, reshaping lives for a better tomorrow.
Blog Talk Radio.
You better believe it.
Believe it.
Believe it. Believe it.
Blog Talk Radio.
EOTM. Hey.
EOTM. My wife Carla started seeing Ronnie do it. Sweet T and Say too, they came too. Taking their debut in the recession, showing us how to make do. In the middle was heavy, but light on the edge. With Shantra Gibson, the righteous get fed. Trey Love crying from his heart to the core. On the move with the mind of an entrepreneur. A better tomorrow, we play for fights. Maximize potential, reshape your life. Time ain't never wasted. They got blogs with guided meditation. Rise above it all at least. Navigating through this Middle East. It's like trying to rollerblade up a hill of grease. The radio media is a Maverick Tudor. With grandma's dripping Don Adams Jr.
Y'all know what it is, man.
E-O.
In the building,
building.
E-O.
What's up, family, and welcome back to EOTM Radio. I am your host, Carla B., and as most of you already know, I am just always excited as ever to be right back here in the house with our friends once again, where we are always striving to encourage, empower, and enlighten your mind. And speaking of enlightening, if you're needing some, guess what? You can always find it when you visit www.queensofinternetradio.com. And stream live to all of our shows at www.eotmradio.com. And for the entrepreneur in you, guess what? We got a place, a very special place for you as well. You can visit www.eotmspace.com, spread the word, and create your space. We are all about increasing networks because we understand that it increases your net worth. And that's that bottom line we're always screaming about. Tonight, y'all, I'll be chatting with best-selling author Robert Greene. And in my opinion, if this gentleman was a music artist, he would be a multi-platinum seller and one of the greatest lyricists of our time. Instead, Robert Greene is one of hip-hop's biggest influencers without ever recording an album. His books have become a must-read for anyone, especially individuals in the entertainment industry. And during the next hour, we'll be taking calls from our listeners. So please feel free to call in to our studio line, and that number is 718-664-6543. We'll also be taking questions from our Facebook and our Skype friends, and our Skype ID is EOTM Radio. And our chat room is open on www.eotmradio.com, so go ahead and hit us up with all of your questions. What I want to do right now is take a quick song break, and we'll be right back with our featured guest, Robert Greene. Hold tight, everybody.
Step into a world where there's no one there.
All of them awesome!
Thank you.
Welcome back, everybody. And for those of you that are just chiming in, I'm Carla B., and I have the honor and pleasure to speak with author extraordinaire Robert Greene right here on EOTM Radio. I'm the four-time New York best-selling author with a background in classical studies and Hollywood screenwriting has decided to grant my wish for a one-on-one interview, which I am so very grateful. His emphasis on rationale, flexibility, and honesty has most definitely set him apart from countless humdrum, political incorrect business self-help writers. His books do not sugarcoat the harsh realities of life. They teach adults how to live life to the fullest. Please welcome Robert Greene. Welcome to EOTM Radio.
Oh, thank you, Carla. Thank you for that wonderful introduction.
Oh, okay, great, of course. Sir, I know I only touched on the surface in introducing you. Can I call you Robert?
Oh, please do. Please do.
Okay. All righty. Well, for the global listeners out there, Robert, please share with them a little bit more about you.
Well, I've been writing books for the last, about 14 years. As you said before, I had worked in Hollywood for several years, and my first book was The 48 Laws of Power, which came out in 98, and that's been my, so far my biggest seller. That has sold over a million copies here in the U.S. And then I had The Art of Seduction was my second book, which came out a few years later, and I'd be happy to talk about that later if you want. And then I wrote a book on warfare and strategy, sort of my version of Sun Tzu's Art of War, called The 33 Strategies of War. And then finally, my most recent book, which came out last year, was co-authored with the rapper 50 Cent, a book called The 50th Law. It's not a biography of 50. It's a real collaboration. We sort of decided to do a book on what it means to be powerful in the world today and kind of going on 50's life and his experiences and my own. We wrote a book about fear and the power you can have in life when you get rid of your fears. And now I'm currently working on my fifth book. So that's pretty much me in a nutshell.
Okay. All right. And thank you for that. That was definitely a mouthful. You have, of course, you've sold millions of books. You touched on the start of your career as being an author, The 48 Laws of Power, Art of Seduction, 33 Strategies of War, and The 50th Law. I just finished reading that, The 50th Law, last night, and I must say it's one of your greatest books yet, in my opinion. So kudos on that one, that collaboration with 50 Cent. Your books are so popular, specifically The 48 Laws of Power. I don't know many young black men who don't own that book already. What do you think that your books, why do you think your books are so popular among urban audiences?
Well, it's hard for me to say. I've talked with other people who, friends of mine who were maybe trying to explain it to me. And I mean, I think one reason was The 48 Laws of Power came out at the right time in 98 when a lot of artists, hip-hop artists, were looking to become entrepreneurs, own their own record label, for instance. The position of the black musician in America is just one of the worst. They're incredibly exploited, going all the way back to the great jazz artists in the 30s and 40s, and continuing on into the 80s and 90s. So a lot of hip-hop artists were thinking that the way to power in this world was to not collect a paycheck from the label, but to own your own label. But these were men and women who didn't necessarily have any background in business, and they found the music industry incredibly cutthroat, Machiavellian. And my book came out at the right time, and they found it very helpful, not just the artists, but their managers, people like Chris Lighty, who happens to be 50's manager, as well as many others. And then I think as well, on a larger scale, a lot of African Americans were coming into the middle class, going into wanting to become entrepreneurs, things were changing in the United States finally, and this book is a very honest approach to what it's like in the real world. Not what they teach you in school, but how the political game is played, and I think the honesty, maybe the brutal honesty, kind of resonated with the urban crowd, which has seen a lot of the dark games that can be played in this world. Those would be my speculations, you know. But
right.
as a white guy, it's a little hard for me to say, but that's what I would maybe venture as a guess.
Right. And it definitely, it does make sense. It really does. And beyond your, I know we touched as far as on book sales and all this good stuff, your books, especially the 48 Laws, your books are constantly referenced in other texts and across the spectrum of media, from hip-hop to business, as you said, to high culture, and they have become must-reads for entire generations of successful people. Do you ever wonder about the impact on society or your place in history? And do you ever stop and think about the fact, like the way you reference great thinkers in history, that people in the future can potentially treat your books the way you treat someone like a Machiavelli? What does it feel like to know that the next generation of writers, myself included, are growing up on you?
Well, it's a great honor. I'd have to pinch myself to believe it because, before I wrote my first book, there was nothing like that in my life. So if that does prove to be the case, I'd be very honored because, as you can tell, if you read my books, I'm someone that has a great reverence for the past and for history. And all my books, I look at people I consider to be kind of icons of power and success in the world. So if I'm ever even considered among them, I'd be very honored. I mean, mostly I found that I have to focus on the book that I'm writing because I always want to make each book better than the last one. So I don't really think – I'm not really looking in the past. I'm looking in the future. But sometimes I do think about that, and it's a thrill. I can't deny it.
Mm. I'm sure it is. I hope to one day, I think about leaving legacies and leaving, something tangible behind, for my children. And it's a beautiful thing to see that, with your work, at least your dream is coming true. I want to talk about a little bit about 50 Cent and the book that you co-wrote with him, The 50th Law.
Yes.
How did this this relationship evolve with 50, and what can readers and our listeners tonight learn from him?
Well, it came about I met him about a little over four years ago, I think. He was a big fan of the 48 Laws of Power. He was one of those musicians who was getting into business just at the time I mentioned when the book came out, a little later than that, and he was a big fan of the book. And at the time I met him, he was kind of going through this weird power struggle with the rapper The Game. Many of you might remember that or know about it. A very weird situation, and it's not that he needed advice, but he wanted to talk to me about it, about what he was doing and his strategies. And so we met in New York, and it was kind of like a scene out of The Godfather because we met in like the back room of the steakhouse where he had all his bodyguards and posse with him, and I was just sort of alone. And it was a very memorable day because we instantly had a really good connection. We come from obviously very different backgrounds. But there was something, it was a nice chemistry between us. We both felt very relaxed. He's a very down-to-earth guy. He's not really what you expected. It's funny because I wasn't what he expected. He expected some kind of older, serious-looking dude maybe Henry Kissinger or something. So he didn't expect me, and I was expecting this kind of thug, intimidating person, and he's not. He's really kind of soft-spoken, really looks you in the eye. He's very interested in you. He's you know, he's very smart, and not that I didn't think he would be smart, but he didn't have that presence that you would associate with his music. Anyway, we had a really good rapport, and we decided, well, maybe someday we'll do something together, and we kind of kept in touch. And this sort of idea evolved for a book that we would do. And I got the idea that on several fronts, it would be really interesting to collaborate with him because we come from such different backgrounds, but that's kind of in many ways the beauty of America, where you can have interactions with people like that. And instead of me doing like a bio of him, which I was not interested in, I thought, let's bring our two minds together, our two different worlds, and see what happens. And the idea I had was that most of my books, I look at people like Napoleon Bonaparte, for instance, who is, you know, wildly successful, and I go deep inside his brain and I try and figure out what made him this brilliant general so that I can share it with the reader and the reader can learn in their lives what they could do similar to Napoleon. So I figured, let's do the same thing with 50. I kind of consider him, I said this before, the Napoleon Bonaparte of hip-hop. I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to get to know him, figure out what separated him, why this guy out of Southside, Queens, where nobody ever really makes it, why did he have success so that we could learn from it? And so he agreed on the book. We decided to do it. And I spent 6 months kind of by his side. I just went everywhere with him, saw a lot of interesting, strange, bizarre things. And I figured out that what made 50, what separates him, what makes him so interesting, is that he's a man that doesn't have fear. And it's not just fear of death or bullets flying or violence. It's not what the book is about. It's the fact that he's not afraid on all levels. He's not afraid of failure. He's not afraid of change. He's not afraid of chaos, of being alone, etc. And so once we decided on that, we just went deeper and deeper into the subject. And I think it's a book that's very timely because a lot of people coming out of the recession, if we are coming out of it, people have a lot of layers of fear that they're not aware of. And I maintain that this is a time we're entering now of incredible opportunity. It's actually a very exciting moment in history. This something new is about to happen, and we're going to enter a new era of opportunity. And it's really a positive, and you have to think of it that way so that you're able to exploit this new moment in history. And so it's a book that I think you can find inspiring and very useful because we go into stories about 50's life, but we also look at a lot of people in history, including a lot of great African-American icons like Frederick Douglass and James Baldwin and Malcolm X, but also a lot of other people in history. And I think you can find the book very useful and inspiring.
Yeah, definitely. And I like the way you said that new era of opportunity. And that's definitely what you know, people want to hear. That's what they definitely should. What I want to, if you can speak up a little bit, I have a little bit of technical interference. Wanted to put that out there. No problem. You're very soft-spoken, and, you know, preparing for this interview, I didn't, you know, I was, you know, kind of nervous, didn't know what to really expect either because, you know, read these books and, you know, all these millions of books you sold and all the great things that you've done, and to think, okay, to have the opportunity to sit with you, no telling, well, I'm just thinking you were a big gorilla man or something. So It's definitely a pleasure to have you on. Now, in the 50 of Law, you mentioned how treacherous the music business can be and made many comparisons between the music industry and the drug game. And I found that to be just fascinating. I do see how, you know, those two, you can make those comparisons. But if you can go ahead and elaborate on that a little bit.
Well, 50 had told me one thing that was very interesting at one point when I was, you know, talking with him, was that, you know, growing up on the streets of Southside, Queens as a hustler and basically a drug dealer, you know, he learned it pretty quickly what the environment was like, what the dangers were, and he got used to it. and he ended up being very, a pretty good hustler. But the music industry was actually worse than the crack game that he was dealing on the streets in Queens, because, you know, when you had an enemy on the streets, you would know it pretty quickly, and you would know more or less what you had to do. But in the music industry, you could never tell who was your friend and who was your enemy, who was the person that really had the power. It was a really crafty, weird game. So in some ways, he thought it was actually worse than what he was dealing with on the streets. And then some of the things that he found were like, you know, a hustler is basically an entrepreneur. And the mentality that started in the mid-'80s when the crack thing exploded was that here was a chance where you could work on your own and not have to, you know, work for a gang. And so, a hustler's an entrepreneur. And in the music business, their whole thing is to try and make you dependent on their money and not let you be an entrepreneur. So he had to go through the same process of relying on himself, on his own skills, and learning everything he could about the music industry on his own. So he applied the same things he'd done on the streets, not depending on anybody else, learning everything for himself. He applied it to the music industry. And then, you know, he told me things like, selling crack, which, you know, we're not glorifying here, don't get me wrong, because we say in the book, it was his only way out, but he wishes that he had become a lawyer or something else. He's not proud of it at all. But, you know, we're honest in the book in explaining his exploits. But, you know, he says that he learned in dealing drugs that you're a better businessman if you get closer to the people that you're dealing with and know their mentality and their psychology. And he applied the same thing when he broke into the music business. He wanted to figure out the tastes of his audience, what appealed to them, what they loved in his music, and get as close to his audience as possible, which he's now done with his website and other ways. So he learned to apply everything he learned on the streets in the music industry in a very real way. And I guess the only connection is that they're both very dangerous environments. One dangerous where you're going to lose your life, and the other dangerous where tomorrow the record label will decide they don't like you're not so hot and your career is over. So it's just a world where you have to be very smart and not naive.
Right. Right. Definitely, I understand that. And one of the things that we ask different artists that come onto our show, we ask them what kind of advice would you be willing to lend to, you know, individuals that are looking to break into the music business. And most of them say, you have to understand the business aspect of it. You have to. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very much so. It's not, I mean, we all want to believe that it's just about your talent, but that's not the reality. And it is a business, and particularly now, where record sales are down and the business model is changing, you have to think about where you can get power in that world. And it doesn't last very long. And so 50 decided, I want to be a powerful person for 10, 20, 30 years. I don't just want to have success for 1 year and then have, you know, then always be thinking about the past. So he had a plan. The other thing I would say from him, and I say it in all my books, is your persistence, your energy, your love for doing something. He's an incredibly persistent person. You know, he got shot 9 times, nearly died, and most people would have just shriveled up and given up and gone into a whole bunch of self-pity. He picked himself up, and he made him even angrier and more energized. This is somebody that just won't stop until he gets what he wants. And if you're like that, if you're persistent, if you believe what you're going to get it and nothing's going to stop you, you're more than likely to reach that goal.
Right. That is so true, and that's one thing we push here as well, you know, perseverance and persistence and stuff, especially, you know, for somebody that's wanting to be that entrepreneur. What was it like working with 50, and what historical figure is he most like in your opinion?
Well, it was very nice. It was great working with him. He's really down to earth, very comfortable person. He's very comfortable with himself. You know, I've been around other celebrities, and they tend to be all about their ego, and they're actually very insecure deep down underneath. And 50s doesn't have that. So he's, if you know my second book, The Art of Seduction, I have a chapter in there about charisma and being charismatic, and he fits the profile of somebody who's charismatic. I recommend that you read that so you can understand what it means to have charisma. But he definitely has that X factor, and I've seen it work on everyone. He's got great power over women. I've witnessed that many times. I mean, some of it's because he's a celebrity, but he's got that.
They call it swagger.
Yeah, he's got that swagger. and so he was great to work with. I mean, occasionally he'd be moody, but not in the sense of being angry or violent, but just, you know, sometimes you get a little bit quiet. He's
right.
Not like a party person. He likes to work out more than anything else and to make money and be successful. So, you know, we had a really nice rapport. I said that, you know, I compare him to Napoleon Bonaparte. I call him the Napoleon Bonaparte of hip-hop because Napoleon was such a great strategist and an opportunist, which isn't a bad word in my vocabulary, and 50s like that. But, you know, spending time around him, he's like, if he took the 48 Laws of Power, he's like a lot of the characters in the book. He's got a part of Talleyrand, of Napoleon, of Louis the 14th, of a great seducer. He's got like five or six of those qualities. He's very crafty, and he's always thinking ahead. So he's kind of like a great strategist in life, you know.
Right, that's awesome, and I definitely learned a lot by just picking up that book and learn a lot, you know, in regards to him and how his mind works and stuff. So that was definitely, I learned a lot from that. I thought I learned a lot from the 48 Laws of Power, but, you know, reading the 50th Law was something. So just dealing with 50 Cent, have you gained a new understanding when it comes to the hip-hop culture?
Well, I saw that it's a really difficult business. And, you know, I'm glad I'm not in it because I don't know how I would manage. I mean, not that I have that kind of dreams, but it's a really difficult environment. You know, I saw that he, for instance, you know, he got his big break from Eminem and Dr. Dre back in, I think, 02 or so or 03 when they signed him to Shady Records. And he had this idea that he wanted to do the same thing for other artists. And it wasn't just pure generosity. He wanted to have his own record label as well and turn into a successful business. But he also wanted to help people. And so he signed up a lot of artists. And a lot of it didn't work out, as probably many of you know. And there were all these egos and rivalries and people who resented the fact that he was the most successful, the big name on up there. They didn't work nearly as hard as he did. You know, so I could see that for him, it's a very, very difficult environment. And he loves, you know, he's got all these other businesses going on, but what he loves the most is music, and he just had to discover that it's so much that happens is political. So, you know, I've always thought that the music industry was quite a dangerous, Machiavellian, shark-infested world, but I saw up close, and I met a lot of people in the business, and they're nice people, I don't get me wrong, but I could see that it's very complicated, and now with the way things are, a very, you know, difficult environment. So,
right.
Yeah.
Alrighty, cool things, cool things. Well, I'm gonna stay on the 50th law for a minute because I want. Well, in the 50th law, you put a lot of emphasis on the rap battles and spoke specifically about the Ja Rule situation. How do you think? How do you think he should have handled that?
Ja Rule? Well, I mean, it's easy to say. It's easy to be the Monday morning quarterback. But
right.
if, you know, the smart thing to do when you're in a situation like that, and, you know, essentially at the time that 50 picked a beef with Ja Rule, 50 was nobody. And Ja Rule was pretty much on the top of the world, top of the hip-hop world at least. What he should have done was to completely ignore 50 and not rise to the bait and not get involved publicly with this beef. But the problem was that 50 was so clever and knew exactly how to hook him into a fight, into a public fight, basically excuse me, by going after the people behind Ja Rule and Murder, Inc. And all that, and getting him so that he had to defend those other people behind on the record label. 50 baited him into this beef, and once it started, he just should have stopped and ignored him and gone on to his own records. I mean, basically, 50 destroyed this guy's career, and he, you know, once the person took the bait and got involved, 50 took every weapon that he had, including parodying him, and just let this guy kind of self-destruct. So, you know, when you're the more powerful figure, you have more to lose. Of course, it's, you know, we've seen now that other people have tried to do the same thing to 50, who are coming up in the hip-hop world, who picked beefs with him, you know, and the game kind of fit that model as well. And sometimes 50 doesn't follow his own advice, and I've talked to him about that, you know, where he sometimes knows that he has to ignore some of these people, but he kind of loves the battle. He loves the fight, and he can't even resist himself. So, you know, he's just a better strategist than any
right.
of these other artists, you know.
Right. You know, Ja Rule, I guess he didn't read your book, 48 Laws of Power, because Law 41 was definitely for him a voice stepping into a great man's shoes.
Well, there's that law, which is probably very applicable, but there's another law as well, which is called Stir Up Waters to Catch Fish, and basically it's about how people will, you know, bait you into things by getting you angry, and the emotion that's the hardest to resist is anger. Once somebody gets you angry, all of your clear thinking, all of your great ideas, they just go out the window and you lose it. And 50 knew how to get under his skin and get this guy angry. So, you know, if he had read the book, if Ja Rule had read the book, everything would have been changed because I wouldn't have written a book with 50 because 50 wouldn't have become famous, you know.
That's something. I want to open up to one of our other radio personalities wanted to chime in on for that particular question. Say, too, you with us?
Yes, I am. Hi, Barbara Green.
Hello.
I am loving the interview caller. This is such a wonderful interview. I am enjoying him.
Thank you very
much. Yes, yes. And one of my personal questions that I have for you, Robert, is that as I was reading the 48 Laws of Power, I realized that some of the laws that were in there were kind of like related to me in a sense. It was just that at some point I really wasn't like utilizing the laws to my best ability. Now, as I was reading the laws to my cousin, she was basically telling me how it's like kind of teaching you how to be like manipulative. Now, how do you feel about that?
How do I feel about what?
As far as
yeah.
No. Like as far as the like the laws kind of seeing, well, kind of teaching you how to be manipulative just to gain power?
Well, you know, you could look at it that way. And there are certain laws that are undeniably kind of nasty. You know, I'm not going to deny that. You know, act like a friend and but be a spy, or crush your enemy totally. There's some heavy chapters in there. But in general, you know, a lot of the laws are designed to open your eyes to what people around you might be doing. Because I think the problem in life isn't that that the bad people out there, the really kind of nasty manipulators, it's not that they're reading my book and becoming more manipulative. Those kinds of people who are really true sharks out there, they already know it. They don't need my book. My book really wouldn't help them. It's the other person, the little guy, who is actually more like what I was 20 years ago, that really can benefit from it, and knowing this is how the game is played. This is what my boss is doing right now. This is how what my coworkers are thinking. There's a law in there, for instance, called get other people to do the work but always take the credit, which, you know, on the surface looks like a pretty nasty chapter. But really that was something that people had done to me many times in Hollywood. They would get me to do all the work and write all this dialogue, and then they would not put my name on it. And,
wow, really?
Yeah, it's a very common thing, and it'll happen in music. It happens in every business. So writing that chapter was like, hey, this is what goes on in the world. Don't be naive. And I get a lot of email from people out there who the book has helped, and 95% it's of people who learn now to not be so naive and to have their eyes open to what's going on. And then occasionally, every now and then, I get an email from someone saying somebody played some nasty game on me that they learned from your books. And, you know, I feel bad, but I think there's more people that use it in the positive way.
I'm sorry, were you going to say something else?
No, that's my answer, more or less.
Alrighty. Hopefully he answers your question, say, too, but I want to definitely move on. What do you, Mrs. Robert, what do you hope people will learn from the 50th Law?
Well, you know, it's not about 50 and glorifying him. It's really about you and your life right now. And people tend to think of fear in sort of a large sense, like I'm afraid of being on airplanes, or I'm afraid of a gun, or whatever it is. But what you need to learn from this book is that you've got all kinds of fears inside of you that are holding you back in life that aren't so obvious. They're not things like, you know, a terrorist attack or something. It's the fact that you're probably afraid of being on your own, of being alone. You're afraid of doing something different. You're holding on to a job because it's secure and it gives you a paycheck, but you're holding on to it because you're afraid. You don't like this job. It's not what you want to be doing in life, and meanwhile, the clock is ticking and you're losing valuable time. It's because you're afraid. You're afraid of quitting or trying something different or realizing your dream. And so this is a book to wake you up to the fact that there are, right now, you have fears inside of you about many things, and the book will make you aware of it. That's all it does. It just makes you aware. And as it makes you aware, you're going to go about in life saying, you know, this is what's holding me back, and I have to deal with these fears in my life. Not that you're going to get rid of all of them. That would be ridiculous. You need to be afraid of some things. You could be afraid of failure, and that can spur you on in life. But more than likely, you've got too much of this fear in your life. We live in a culture of where we're just immersed in it. And I think the book, if you read it and absorb it, it can really help you confront this problem.
Right, right. And definitely, you've given some great, great advice, and I believe so too. So listeners, definitely make sure you pick up the 50th Law. So Robert, we've read the 48 Laws of Power and the latest one, which is the 50th Law. So tell me, is there a 49th law in the works?
No, there is not. You know, I'm gonna. What I'm working on now is a book called The Master Player, and basically, I'm saying that life is kind of like a game. It's a metaphor that I use in my books a lot, and some people play this game of life on just a high level. They're like masters at the game. They're master players, and I've been studying them for 15 years now. That's all I've been doing, and I see these traits that they all have in common, this way of thinking. And I'm going to reveal to everyone this kind of secret. It's not really a secret, but I'm going to reveal to everyone why these people are superior at the game. I'm going to have some people from history, and there are going to be some right now who are alive, our contemporaries, who exemplify this kind of mastery of life. And I'm just going to show you what it means and what it takes so you can play the game on a higher level. The 49th law, you know, maybe 10 years from now, if Ja Rule wants to do a book, you know, I'm probably.
Oh my God!
You know, about what not to do. If he wants to write that book about the mistakes I made, you know, maybe there would be a 49th law, but probably not.
Right. Wow. We definitely gonna make sure Ja Rule gets that. That little bit of information that you shared with us. So appreciate it. Appreciate it, Robert. How did you get into writing about power, seduction, and strategy? And is this something that you've always been obsessed with, or did it come about accidentally and you just ran with it?
Well, both. I've always been obsessed with it when I was a little boy. I mean, I love games and I love sports. You know, basketball is my favorite, but I love boxing. I love all sports. But my thing was always to look at the strategy, like the mental aspect of the game, why some people were so crafty and smart. And that's just always obsessed me. And then when I worked in business and in Hollywood or wherever, I always thought, you know, people say something. They say that this is what they were doing or what their motives were. But in fact, they're not doing that at all. They're after power or whatever. And I've always been wanting to analyze people like that. I don't look at what they say. I look at what they do and figure it out like it's a game that they're playing. These are the moves that they're making in life. And so when I had a chance to write my first book, I met this man in Italy in 1995 who packages books. And he asked me if I had an idea for a book. And I just sort of improvised what would turn into the 48 Laws because I had all of these experiences and all these things I've been reading, and I wanted to just sort of, you know, say this is the kind of book I want to write, a book that would actually, I can't find out there. I want to be able to read something like this. There's no book out there. And he heard what I said, and I told him some of the examples from history, and he really loved the idea, and so he essentially paid me to live while I wrote the 48 Laws. And because that's a book that's like about strategy and power, naturally I included in the book a lot of things about seduction because I consider seduction a real high form of power. A person that knows how to seduce in the office or in politics or on television, that's the kind of person that's going to have the most power in this world in the 21st century because you don't even realize what they're up to. They're making you laugh. They're giving you pleasure, whatever it is. But in the meantime, they have power over you. They have influence. That, to me, was the ultimate form of power. So that was naturally the second book. And then warfare and strategy kind of is about what everything is about in life in all of my books. So that was sort of the natural thing to do. But it is a way I have of thinking about everything.
Right. Did you want to chime in on that?
Yes, like I totally agree with what he just said as far as like the seduction thing.
Yeah.
Like for the 48 Laws of Power, do you feel as though like every single body on this world have one of the traits, but they just don't know it?
In seduction or in power? One of the traits, which traits?
Just the power, like just literally.
You mean, like, is everybody capable of becoming more powerful in life, kind of? You know,
No, what I'm saying is, do you feel as though that everybody in this world have at least one of the laws that you've mentioned in your book?
Oh, definitely. I mean, of course. And you know, people don't often are not aware of the laws that they're using. They use some of these laws that I'm talking about. I have a chapter in there called Play the Perfect Courtier, which means if you're in an environment that's kind of political, this is how you are so smooth that people don't even know what you're up to. And there are a lot of people out there who just do that naturally. They don't need to read a book. But when you read it, you say, oh, yeah, this is kind of what I do. I think everybody out there has some element of power that they're using. And the reason I say that, I mean, there are some people who are aggressive and overt, and we all know what they're like. And then there are some people who are passive-aggressive, who are good at making other people feel guilty or bad, or they play all kinds of underhanded games. But then there are people who are a mix, or that they're whatever. But the thing is, everybody wants power. You don't want to be powerless in life. You don't want to feel like you have no control over your kids or your husband or wife or your colleagues. That's the most miserable feeling in the world, that you can't have any influence over them. So every single human being on this planet is trying to get power, and they're going to get it one way or the other, and they're going to use some of these laws. Some people use them poorly, some people use them better, but everybody, I believe, is in some ways using them, yes.
Right. Great, great information, great advice on that. I can't believe we've already been on air for 50 minutes with you,
really?
Robert. And my phone lines are just jam-packed. We do have a couple callers we'll take one or two questions from. But I do want to touch on your book, The 33 Strategies of War. I read that one, and I loved it. In fact, I cannot recommend that one highly enough to our listeners. But I want to ask you this. How do you think The 33 Strategies holds up against your other work, and what has been the general reaction to it?
Well, I think there are people out there who think it's their favorite book, but you know, it's a little less obvious than like the 48 Laws of Power or the Art of Seduction. It's a little more, you have to think a little bit more. But if you're into strategy, if you're into games and gamesmanship, if you're into Sun Tzu and getting an edge in life, in business, or whatever, then this is the most important of the three books, because it shows you the groundwork, the foundation of being a great strategist in life, how to mentally prepare yourself for the battles that we have. You know, a lot of people nowadays in our somewhat politically correct environment, we're not prepared for dealing with conflict. You know, we're not prepared for the nasty stuff that sometimes people pull. And when it happens in life, we get emotional and upset and all that stuff. And this is a book that shows you how you have to ground yourself in being so controlled, in having a sense of discipline, and how to think like a strategist. So if you know the 33 strategies of war, you're going to be better at playing the games in the 48 Laws of Power or at seduction. So it's probably the most important of the three books in a way.
Right, definitely. And you guys better go out and pick that one up as well. I mean, his books are just a collection. If you have one, you just have to get the other three. I want to open up the phone line really, really quickly to a caller out of New York. I believe Saran.
Hello.
917.
Hello.
Hey, we got a. Hey, can you hear us?
Yeah. You got. Hello.
Yeah, we can hear you just fine. Just
okay.
Breath.
Yeah, a couple seconds, real quick. I just want to.
Okay.
I'm I'm actually on the radio myself right now. I had to get off the air to come give a few words to the brother, Robert Green. You know what I'm saying? Are you there, brother?
I'm here, yeah.
I just literally read the book, like about a week and a half ago.
Which book?
The 50th Law.
Oh, cool, okay.
I just read it, like I just finished reading it about a week and a half ago, I must say. And I already read the 48 Laws of Power twice.
Okay.
So now I read the 50th Law. It definitely relates to what you put in the 48 Laws, definitely.
Uh-huh.
I believe anybody, it's definitely an extension of what you started with the 48 Laws of Power. And I never thought that I would get a chance to tell you this, but thanks to my good friend Carla B., who I'm a really good friend with.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm calling from New York City, by the way.
Okay.
I'm up here, you know, we got the radio show, online radio show right now, in the mixradio.com. And like I said, we were live on the air, so I had to jump off the air right quick to, you know, give you a shout out. I wanted to just, you know, tell you that I read the book. I'm definitely a fan of your work. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, I don't personally know 50 Cent myself, but I know a lot of the people that's around him that helped him with his movie and stuff like that before I self-destruct, things of that nature. So,
yeah.
You know, I want to thank Carla for giving me this opportunity to be able to reach out to you. You know,
you ever want me on your own radio show, let me know.
Yes, please. Definitely. Definitely. Are you ever going to be in the New York area by any chance? Like anytime soon?
I'm in New York a lot. I love New York. I'm there like, you know, at least 5 or 6 times a year. I'll probably be there in about 3 weeks. Yeah.
Really? Is that right?
Get my email from Carla and
okay.
And I, you know, I'd love to do that. Sure.
Definitely. That's a go. There it is. My name is Faran. Faran Chisholm is my name, just so you know. You get a funny email like, who is this guy?
Okay. Yeah, no, let's definitely do it.
Thank
definitely,
you so much, Ryan, for calling in, and we'll make sure you definitely get the contact information for Robert Green. Thanks for calling in, and good luck on your show tonight, okay?
Yeah, I'm going back on the air right now, so
okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Carla. You know I love you.
Thank you, Faran.
Thanks so much. Great stuff. Thanks for that. We have 5 minutes, so unfortunately we're not going to take any more callers at this time, but I did want to have a couple other questions for you, Robert.
Yeah.
One of the main critics that people make of you, or critiques, I'm sorry, about your work is that it is either immoral, immoral, or both. How do you respond to these critics?
Well, you know, my response is I don't write about how people should be, how they ought to be. I write about what they are, what the reality is. And there are plenty of other books out there written by all sorts of good writers about how people ought to act in this life, what would be ethical, what would be moral. My problem that I experienced was that there weren't enough books written about what is really going on in this life. You know, how you can say that people should be good, and I have no argument with that, and we can have an interesting discussion about it, but the reality isn't like that, and we all know it. Everybody who's over the age of 22, who's worked in this world, probably could be younger, you know that isn't how it's like. It can be a real jungle out there, and a lot of people are looking out for themselves, and you just have to have more kind of life skills and awareness. So I don't want to sugarcoat things. I have this idea that the reader of my books, they're adults. They're not children. So you being a moral person, that's the stuff that you learned from your mother, your father, your peers. I'm going to tell you this is what really is happening in the world around you, and you use what I'm teaching you or what I'm showing to you in the way that you see as proper. Because I think there's too much preaching in this world of people telling others this is what you should do or ought to be. You know, it's really up to the individual, your own choices, and you're not going to get that from a book. So that's sort of my answer.
Right, and I definitely agree with you 110%, if I can do that. But I want to also, in closing, want to go ahead and get ready to close, but I want to say that the basic structure, in my opinion, of all four of your books is that you take the wisdom and experiences of the great thinkers throughout history and distill them into something that's easily understandable. These are, you know, easily understandable laws and strategies. So do you consider your books to be works of original thought or works of syntheticism or somewhere in between?
Probably somewhere in between. I mean, they're original in that I take the ideas of other people, I mix them with my own ideas, my own experiences, and I create something different or new. You know, the 48 Laws of Power, for instance, is based on a lot of great books that I've read, from Machiavelli to Gracian to Sun Tzu and history. But there, I'm not bragging, but there's not another book out there like the 48 Laws of Power. There's not a book that looks like it, with things on
right.
the margin, with the images, with the way it's broken up. So on the one hand, I've taken things from history, but on the other hand, I created something that I think is kind of unique for better or worse. So it's probably a mix of the two.
Right, right. And I definitely am. It's great to be somewhere in the mix of it all. You know, Robert, what is in the future for you? And I know that you have a new book and all that good stuff. What can we look forward to in the coming years from Robert Greene?
Well, there's the next book, what I've already mentioned, The Master Player, which will be out, God willing, in a year and a half to 2 years, maybe a little less. I have my blog, which is powerseductionandwar.com, that, you know, the and is A-N-D, so powerseductionandwar.com, and I have a lot of things you can read on there. I don't update it enough, so I'm sorry about that, but there is a new one. A new entry coming in tomorrow that you might find interesting. There's HBO, we're in production. I should say whether, because sometimes these things fall apart, but there's a film version, a television version of the 48 Laws of Power that we're working on. That's probably a year away from actually hitting the screen, but that's kind of exciting. And
wow.
Perhaps an art of seduction as well that we're working on. So, you know, kind of busy, and those are the things that's going on.
That's what's up. Give me your blog site again, please.
Okay, Power, Seduction, and War. The and is A-N-D, not the symbol. So powerseductionandwar.com.
Okay, great, and we'll put that up on our radio page. Link
okay.
it for there as well. Definitely.
You'll find links.
Go ahead.
I believe to there's an email address where you can reach me, and there's I believe a link to my Facebook page and to Twitter. So, you know, go
great,
ahead.
Great, and we'll definitely link it. You know, from EOTM Radio, just in case you guys didn't get it. But that's www.powerseductionandwar.com. Great information.